Will Biden end the U.S. forever war in Afghanistan? I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. President Biden announced a complete troop withdrawal from what he called the forever war in Afghanistan by September 11th.
Only the Afghans have the right and responsibility to lead their country.
President Biden speaking from the treaty room, the same room in the White House where President George W. Bush announced the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan in October 2001. In the two decades since, over 100,000 Afghan civilians have been killed, along with 45,000 members of the Afghan army and police, and at least 3,500 U.S. and coalition troops. Zahir Wahab knows well the impact of the invasion and occupation on his home country of Afghanistan. Wahab, a professor of education for decades, splits his time between the U.S. and Afghanistan. Since the 2001 invasion, he's been helping rebuild Afghanistan's shattered education system.
This invasion and occupation and the bloodshed have destroyed the country, its economy, its institutions, its infrastructure, its education, its way of life, relationships among the different ethnic groups. This occupation has been nothing short of a catastrophe.
Professor Wahab was speaking on the Democracy Now! NewsHour.
The United States and its allies should never have attacked and occupied Afghanistan. It was wrong, it was illegal, and I think it was immoral. The war may end for the United States, but the war will intensify for Afghanistan unless something must be done, and that is that we need to constitute a UN peacekeeping force immediately.
There are no plans yet for UN peacekeepers, and a central demand of the Taliban in the ongoing peace negotiations is a complete withdrawal of foreign forces by May 1st, the date set by President Trump. Biden's delayed troop withdrawal may start then, but will it be as complete as promised?
This does not include the thousands of men and women who are part of U.S. Special Operation and NATO Special Operation teams, CIA teams, as well as the, literally dozens of squadrons of attack aircraft and bombers, whether they be manned or droned, that are in the area.
That's Matthew Ho speaking on the Democracy Now! NewsHour. He's a senior fellow at the Center for International Policy. He was a Marine in the occupation of Iraq, followed by a State Department position in Afghanistan. He resigned in 2009 in protest of President Obama's escalation of the war.
The potential for the United States to remain involved militarily is quite high, even if all 3,500 acknowledged U.S. troops are withdrawn, as well as the NATO troops. The devastation on the Afghan people is hard to imagine. That 2.5 million refugees are what's registered right now. But there have been millions and millions of refugees for the last 40 years. For most of these last 40 years, the Afghans have been the largest refugee population in the world, with the exception of a period of time when the Syrians were. But as the Syrians go back, as that war has wound down, the Afghans, I believe, are once again the largest refugee population in the world. It's something like 70% of Afghans subsist on a dollar a day. There is no industry in Afghanistan to speak of.
The most recent estimate of the financial cost to the United States of the war in Afghanistan over the past 20 years from Brown University's Cost of War Project is $2.3 trillion, which could have built a lot of infrastructure in both Afghanistan and in the United States. Instead, the U.S. bought weapons, built soon-to-be-abandoned bases, and endlessly cycled troops through repeated deployments. Care for injured veterans and debt on the money borrowed to wage war will continue to cost U.S. taxpayers for decades to come. This doesn't count the billions spent arming the Afghan Mujahideen to fight the invading Soviet army during the 1980s, arms and training turned against the United States and its allies decades later. On September 14, 2001, days after the al-Qaeda attacks on the U.S., California Congresswoman Barbara Lee spoke on the House floor opposing military action against Afghanistan.
Now, I have agonized over this vote, but I came to grips with it today, and I came to grips with opposing this resolution during the very painful yet very beautiful memorial service. As a member of the clergy so eloquently said, as we act, let us not become the evil that we deplore.
Congressmember Lee gave that speech just before casting the lone vote against the Authorization for Use of Military Force, or AUMF, which remains in effect to this day. This week, Lee applauded Biden's announced troop withdrawal, adding, "This is the result of decades of hard work by activists, advocates, and members of Congress committed to ending our forever wars. We must utilize this momentum to rein in executive war powers and put that power back in the hands of Congress and the people," she said. Lee is also leading a group of 50 House members who sent a letter to President Biden urging him to slash the Pentagon budget. She said in a statement, "As we face a global pandemic and unprecedented economic crisis, the needs of American families far outweigh the need to continue feeding our bloated military defense budget." California Congressmember Ro Khanna, a co-signer of the letter, spoke on the Democracy Now! NewsHour.
If you're ending the forever war in Afghanistan, as the president pointed out, that should save about $50 billion a year, then why are we increasing at the same time the defense budget? We need to look at where the numbers are being allocated and have a strategic reduction and allocate that instead in the threats that the United States faces: potential pandemics, climate change, cybersecurity.
Ending the war in Afghanistan should be a beginning, accompanied immediately by reparations to the Afghan people. President Biden should also end U.S. military interventions elsewhere, starting with Iraq, and cut the military budget. After decades of war, let's give peace a chance. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.